This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
It is never a terrible thing to rock Baba O'Reilly at the start of the show. Never a bad thing. On the Low, Who's Next is one of the five greatest albums that has ever been put out. And I'll fight you if you think otherwise. It just gets you. It just gets you. No, the title of this song is not Teenage Wasteland.
It is not.
It's Baba O'Reilly. So yesterday, by the way, this is the Adam Gold Show. I'm Adam Gold. That's V to the Victoria. I actually think that's the best way to identify you.
It's okay.
So yesterday I started the show not really mad at Matt Rhule. Because I watched the game and I just didn't feel like, apart from that end of game conservative nature, I didn't see a game in which Matt Rhule screwed it up. Like, I thought they used their timeouts well defensively, which is the better way to use your timeouts if you're trying to conserve time. There are too many ways to stop the clock on offense, running it out of bounds, spiking the ball, blah, blah, blah. In college, pick up a first down, which is stupid that they stop the clock after a first down. It's part of the reason why college football games are marathons. Seriously, I could watch the final round of a major golf championship in the same time as it takes to watch a college football game. So I wasn't mad at Matt Rhule. And then I heard that. Adam Gold in studio with my friend Coach Pete DeRuta with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. Coach, how does longevity risk figure into our retirement and income plan?
This is the best of times and the worst of times, Adam. The longevity risk means we're going to live too long. But to me, every day I live is not too long.
Right, absolutely.
Good. So we want our money to outlive us. And unfortunately, many people I've seen, you out there listening, maybe one of them, your money is not designed to outlive you. You might outlive your money, and that's not what we want to have happen. Because when we get to that day after you run out of money, it's not going to be a fun time. So let's design a plan that guarantees you'll never run out of money. We call it the GPI plan, Growth Protection Lifetime Income. For the next 10 people, this is a golden ticket, Adam. $1,000 value, we're going to do it at no cost or obligation.
And all you have to do is call. We make it so easy. Would you like financial independence into your retirement and beyond it? 800-661-7383. That golden ticket is a $1,000 value, or you could text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuta. And now my question is, who would you rather have as your head coach? Matt Rhule or Nathaniel Hackett?
No, thank you.
The answer is not no. The answer is not neither. The answer is, who would you rather have? And I think at this point, well, there's two answers. One, there's Nathaniel Hackett, because we could chalk up yesterday to nerves and its first game, right? Just like we say the game moves too fast for, you know, rookie quarterbacks or things like that. Maybe the game just moved too fast for Nathaniel Hackett last night, like all game long. It was a dreadful performance from the Denver Broncos. They succeeded almost in spite of themselves. So there's that. Nathaniel Hackett might actually get better. Or would you rather have Matt Rhule, because you know the end is nigh? Interesting dilemma. We might have to pose that question a little bit later on. Anyway, thanks for spending some time with us. It's the Adam Gold Show. We got a lot of things to do. We're going to talk about the Panthers. Julian Council does the Locked On Panthers podcast. We're going to talk to Wes Durham. ACC basketball schedules are going to be released today. Not sure we care, but the basketball schedules will be released today. I don't know that we're going to talk about it with Wes Durham. I actually think that other than the Sun Belt, which, you know, we're always grading everything on a curve, everything is relative. I actually think the ACC has an argument that based on expectations and all of that, it's been a really good start to the conference season, because we've played so few conference games, but I think it's been a pretty good start to the year for the ACC. Yeah, Boston College lost at home to Rutgers, a game they should have won. Virginia Tech, you know, pooped on their shoes at Old Dominion. Pitt lost a tough game at home against Tennessee, but Tennessee's legitimately good, and Pittsburgh was there with a backup quarterback to win. I thought that was a competitive football game. But ACC's been pretty good, and I think the ceiling is high for a bunch of teams. I think we've seen Florida State look competent. I think we've seen Miami look like they're certainly not going to be a 7-win team. Then at the bottom of the league, what's up with Syracuse? Louisville picked up a good win. After losing at Syracuse, Louisville picked up a good win at Central Florida. That's a good win. Again, the ACC going on the road against Group of Five teams. Like, don't get this wrong. I'm not saying you shouldn't play Group of Five teams. I'm saying you should play them at home. You should play them on your field. That's the power of the group of the Power Five, unless you choose not to wield it, which apparently Louisville, like, I don't know, maybe that's a 2-for-1 deal. Maybe you play 2 in Louisville and 1 at Central Florida. But anyway, so I think the ACC has been pretty good. We'll talk to Wes Durham about that, and maybe we'll get into some other things. For instance, I'll pose this question, and we'll get to it at some point today, maybe later in the week. But our friends at CBSSports.com, Matt Norlander and Gary Parrish, and this is more of a Norlander thing, they do a Coach's Confidential where they pose questions regarding their sport to a bunch of basketball coaches. And the question was, should the NCAA lower the number of automatic bids to the basketball tournament? 68 teams play in the basketball tournament. I think there are 31 automatic bids. So 31 conferences, they each have an automatic bid. Should the NCAA take some of those automatic bids away? I will give you my answer to that question. It's actually simple. It's a no. They should not. But if they do, you know where they should take them from? They should take them from the multi-bid leagues. Not from the Atlantic Suns of the world. Not from the Ivy Leagues of the world. They should take them from the ACCs and the Big Tens and the SECs, the multi-bid leagues, because in general, their champions were going to get bids anyway. In general, their champions were going. Now, that's not 100% across the board, but for the most part, they were going. And that would, if you're going to take automatic bids away, that's where I'd take them. But that's another matter for another day, or at least another part of the show. With all of that said, we got a lot of stuff to get to, so let's kick it off. They're off. This is an old coaching adage. I've heard Bill Belichick refer to this, and I'm not really sure who has said it, but it's been said by a lot of different coaches, that more games are lost than won. Bill Belichick definitely has said it, but again, he's not the only one. Last night is a supreme example of how teams and coaches can lose football games. The Broncos piled up nearly 450 yards of total offense at Seattle. The Seahawks barely moved the ball in the second half in a close game. Denver had three trips inside the Seahawks' 10-yard line that led to just 3 total points. Then, thanks to clock mismanagement and as much indecision as I have ever seen from an NFL head coach, Denver chose a 64-yard field goal attempt for the win instead of trusting Russell Wilson, to whom they just signed a $250-ish million contract. 4th and 5 versus a 64-yard attempt, and they chose the 64-yard attempt. Look, I don't know about probabilities of converting. The truth is that McManus, the kicker, had enough leg behind the ball to convert it. It was just a little bit wide left. But you know what? From 64 yards, there's a lot of room for it to be wide left. My gosh. Also, there were two turnovers, both at the goal line. There were 12 penalties. That's why Denver's heading home 0-1. We're going to get the sound from this game in a moment. There's great sound on both sides from both locker rooms. Just great stuff. A couple of other NFL matters to deal with before we circle back and you get a chance to hear from Denver and Seattle. Dallas Cowboys season is hanging in the balance. Flat hanging in the balance. And this is what happens when your roster is basically on a razor's edge. Dallas didn't do a ton to improve their roster. Amari Cooper is gone. They are suffering from some pretty significant injuries at the wide receiver spot, not named CeeDee Lamb. I know they franchise tagged the wide receiver or the tight end. Ezekiel Elliott is still there, as is Tony Pollard. But the offensive line is not what it used to be. It's still good, providing they're completely healthy, but no, they're not. Teron Smith is hurt, and the Dallas Cowboys defense is good. In fact, it has potential to be really good, but they're not capable of winning it on their own, and they couldn't do that against Tampa Bay. So when Dak Prescott breaks a bone in his hand that requires surgery, and the initial reaction is 6 to 8 weeks, which is essentially just about 45% of the season, 40% of the season. I mean, if it's 8 weeks, it's through week 9, which I think Dallas has a bye coming up. Maybe they, I don't even know. I think their bye is like in week 7 or 8 or something like that. So maybe it encompasses the bye. But you're still talking about almost half the season with Cooper Rush as your quarterback. So Dallas had an option. Dallas could go the IR route, maybe even bring in a viable option other than Cooper Rush. Although Will Greer is on the Dallas Cowboys roster. Yeah, that Will Greer.
Their bye week is November 6th.
So all right, so halfway. Halfway. Mm-hmm. There you go. Dallas could be over. It could be over. So Dallas is not putting Dak Prescott on IR. Okay. Jerry must know something that we don't. All right, a couple of other, one other NFL note. The Jets were the Jets on Sunday. I can't wait to play this audio. We will get it for you, but we'll just set it up. Jets were the Jets on Sunday. In other words, unthreatening. 24-9 loss to the Ravens, though they're were some pretty good signs defensively from New York. The Ravens were mostly big plays. The Ravens were not sustained, you know, in your face. They had less than 300 yards of total offense. It wasn't a ton. Maybe it was just a shade more than 300 yards. Lamar Jackson had 3 big plays at quarterback. But to Jets fans who were subjected to watching Joe Flacco play quarterback when a more vibrant and mobile Mike White is on the roster, this is the same chapter in an 11-year book that everybody knows the outcome. They're not going to make the playoffs again. Matter of fact, the Jets' only winning season, I'm trying to remember exactly which one it is. I remember the head coach. It was Todd Bowles' first year with the Jets, and Ryan Fitzpatrick was their quarterback. He wasn't supposed to be their quarterback, but he became their quarterback because it was a good Ryan Fitzpatrick season. They get to the final game of the season. They were 10-5 going into Buffalo. All they got to do is win a game, and they make the playoffs. And this wasn't even a good Buffalo team. This was a bad Buffalo team, and the Jets got spanked. Had a good year. Just didn't make. They were 10-6. Didn't make the playoffs. We'll listen to Robert Saleh, who is feeling himself after a 24-9 loss at home to the Ravens. All right, a couple of other things before we get back, and you can hear this stuff, or at least one more thing. Notre Dame is 0-2. They've got losses at Ohio State, understandable, and at home to Marshall. What? Really? Now, no offense, Marshall, quality football program from the Sun Belt. But on the road in South Bend, that's probably an unforced error by Notre Dame. But here's where it gets worse for the Irish. Set aside my joke that if Notre Dame were in the ACC, they would still have a lot of season left to play. Set aside that. Starting quarterback, Tyler Buckner's hurt. Drew Pine will be the starter. He's not as good as the guy he's replacing, and he is less elusive. Small and not quite as shifty. And the schedule suddenly looks pretty daunting for Notre Dame. When you lose at home to Marshall, you start to have doubts with a lot of the games left on their schedule. Cal this week, look, I have no idea if Cal's any good. Zero, I have zero idea. Let's just say Cal's not. All right, chalk that up. Tar Heels next week. I know this about North Carolina. If you're going to beat them, you're going to have to score. Now, North Carolina sometimes cooperates with that. They will cooperate with your desire to score. But you're going to have to score a fair amount. Notre Dame has, 31 points in two games? 10 at Ohio State, 21 at home to Marshall, if I have that right. But it's not just that. Suddenly, the game at Syracuse doesn't look like such a pushover. They also have a game against Clemson and a trip to Southern Cal at the end of the season. Oh, by the way, BYU is on the schedule. BYU are men. They are grown men. Seriously, it's a bunch of sixth-year players at BYU. These are adults. Suddenly, Notre Dame, in Marcus Freeman's first year, it doesn't look so promising. And it gets me to this topic, and we'll explore this more with Wes Durham, because I've been saying this for a long time. Jack Swarbrick, the AD at Notre Dame, has been on the playoff expansion four-person committee. And the theory was that Notre Dame has set themselves up to not need a conference. And I have been saying, as everybody has been talking about this, that that is a fallacy, because Notre Dame is not Alabama, is not Ohio State, before expansion or before realignment is not Oklahoma, and isn't even some of the other blue-bloodish schools like a Georgia, or if Lincoln Riley can return, Southern Cal, Southern Cal. And keep this in mind, prior to Brian Kelly figuring it out, and he figured it out, for about a quarter of a century, Notre Dame, if we go back and say these are all 12-team playoffs in the format that is being suggested and going to be applied, Notre Dame in about a quarter of a century would have made the playoffs maybe four times. So, my thought is that Notre Dame isn't set up, and they are in the exact same position that some of us thought they were heading into this era, in that at some point, you're going to need a playoff. At some point, you're going to need a conference. Edit that later. It'll sound much better if I don't screw it up.
Got you.
Okay? Edit that later. That's my feeling. We'll talk about this more with Wes Durham a little bit later on. All right, I got to get back to the game last night. And I am, like, it's a lot for me to watch a Monday night football game that I don't have a ton of interest in either team. I'm not a gambler, so that's not it. Although I did win my fantasy football game last night.
Oh, good.
Yeah, my first time playing fantasy football in almost 20 years. Apparently, I played our friend Lauren Brownlow.
Oh,
and she's
wow.
Very mad, and I'm sorry.
Well, there you
I apologize.
Go.
If I could have tanked the game, I would have. But I had Jerry Jeudy and Javonte Williams.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
so I had the guy who fumbled at the goal line.
Right.
Anyway, I actually don't think it was his fault, but that's neither here nor there. Anyway, but I watched last night because there was a human interest angle to it. Russell Wilson is back in Seattle, and they booed him. And they booed him every time he stepped on the field. And I'm like, yeah, it's okay. I feel bad because he was so great for them, but I think they should have cheered him the first time they saw him, and then You boo him every time he's on the field because he's no longer yours. And that's what fandom is about. And it's okay. But I was surprised that Russell was treated harshly at the beginning. We'll get back to that in just a second. All right, so the real story of this game, when you boil it all down, comes in the final drive. And Nathaniel Hackett is the brand new head coach of the Broncos. I believe he was the offensive coordinator last year for the Green Bay Packers, right? Didn't he come from Green Bay? I think he was. So not only did you, did you work with Aaron Rodgers, but you have been indirectly blessed by Sean McVay. Because that's where, no, is it Matt LaFleur came? No, he didn't come from there. I don't know. It's that whole Kyle Shanahan coaching arm. Anyway, so Nathaniel Hackett did not look like an accomplished head coach last night. And on the final drive, with Russell Wilson sort of moving the ball down the field, albeit conservatively, short passes, Javonte Williams out of the backfield, blah, blah, blah. They're faced with a 4th and 5 at, just across the 45-yard line? Or right at the 45-yard line, just about?
Yeah.
And there's 50 seconds left on the clock. And they let the clock run down to 20. And by the way, they have all 3 timeouts left.
They do.
And they settled for a 64-yard field goal. 64! Pete Carroll, head coach of the Seattle Seahawks. Surprised?
It just shows you this was such a team win and such a smart play, well-played game by all the fellas out there, because we just kept hanging and we took advantage of the penalties and we didn't give them hardly anything on their penalty side of it. The ball, the belief in our guys to keep hanging down there around the goal line. It's been an incredible couple sequences down there and some great group plays that made that happen. The line of scrimmage was big, and then the guy made the hit, and then the guy makes the recovery. Just fantastic stuff. I don't know. I was surprised that they took Russ out there at the end. We weren't thinking field goal there. We thinking, it was 4th down, and they're still going. So we, it gave us a chance to win the game on that play. So we were fortunate there. Fortunate the guy to make the kick. He kicked the hell out of the ball.
Yeah, look, there was enough on the ball, right? It was wide left, but it was from 64 yards. So it's hard. It's not like you've got 30 yards. I'll put it in golf term. I love to use golf analogies. If the fairway is 12 yards wide, or however far apart the hash marks are, if the fairway is 12 yards wide, then you're going to think twice about hitting driver. Because the further you try to get the ball down the fairway, you just have to be that little bit offline for the ball to go offline. I mean, it was a great kick, but the odds of converting a 64-yard field goal versus the odds of converting 4th and 5 with Russell Wilson and weapons, they can't be the same. They just can't be the same. Here's Nathaniel Hackett, Broncos head coach, on the decision.
4th and 6, for me, during that time, we had been just moving it slightly. They weren't moving it with big chunks. I think we had just given up a sack right before that. So wanted to be sure that we took a chance when we had a chance. And I felt confident in him.
All that's true. All that's true, except it was still a dumb decision. Remember that the Broncos still had 2 timeouts after the missed field goal. And there's about 13 seconds left on the clock after the field goal is missed.
This episode is brought to you by DirecTV Stream. DirecTV Stream is your home for football this season because it's the best way to catch the games you won't want to miss. And with the DirecTV Stream Sports Hub, you can follow your favorite teams and track scores all in one place. That means more ways to follow the biggest hits, drives, and wins this season. So many, you may need your own touchdown dance. So get your sports together and get your TV together at DirectTV.com. Compatible device required. Content varies by package.
The Broncos used both of those timeouts as Seattle was kneeling out the clock. They couldn't force a punt because they only had two timeouts. But Pete Carroll noted that it did give his team something a little extra at the end.
It was a great night. The fans were ridiculous. The 12s were so good tonight. God dang, they were great. And I'm so pleased that we could give them a game like this that they could have that much fun. And they, we have to win the game on three times with those timeouts. So each time we won a game again, then we won a game again, then we won a game again. It was great. So I wasn't bugged by that at all.
That is just such beautiful trolling from Pete Carroll.
He wasn't bugged at all by
Not
it.
Not bugged one single bit. Gosh. All right, we got more to hear from. We'll hear from Robert Saleh a little bit later on. You'll hear from Russell Wilson on returning to Seattle. He put on a good face about it, but the truth is that the first time he stepped on the field, it should have been a good reception for him. I mean, he did bring the Seahawks a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Right? They won a Super Bowl because of him. And because of other factors, but he was great in that Super Bowl. And he did throw an interception that cost him another one, but it really wasn't his fault as much. It was really a great defensive play by the New England Patriots. And I know people hate the play call. I didn't hate the play call. I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it. But anyway. It's the Adam Gold Show. I'm Adam Gold. V to the Victoria, producing this program. Something I should have said during the commercial break, Victoria. The Matt Rhule clip from yesterday where he talks about the surprised that somebody could go the length of the field.
And yes, that garbage.
Grab that.
Okay.
Grab that. I want to use that as we talk to my friend Julian Council, Locked On Panthers podcast, here on the Adam Gold Show. Sir, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Adam. Doing well, despite not being able to get through 1 week of the season without everyone losing their minds and being mad as hell because the Panthers looked pretty bad for the most part in that game, but then found a way to look like win the game and then lost it because of a little bit of the officiating and the defense not being able to get off the field all day. But other than that, it's a beautiful day here in North Carolina.
You and I probably processed that game the same way. Nothing that I saw was a surprise. The Browns without, you know, with Jacoby Brissett were a mess early. They're significantly better in personnel, especially when they run the football, than Carolina, because you can run the ball, especially straight ahead, and Cleveland's good at it. They've got two great running backs. So I wasn't surprised at anything that I saw during the game. And I actually didn't even hate the Matt Rhule game one, year three experience. I did question whether or not, you know, being super conservative after getting to the 15-yard line was the right call. But then he said after the game that he didn't think that somebody could go 40 to 45 yards without any timeouts in a little bit more than a minute. And I wondered if he'd ever watched NFL football. Did you have the same feeling? Because I didn't hear it until yesterday. Did you have the same feeling that, you know, do you watch the National Football League, Matt?
Yeah, and going back to that drive that led to a field goal, and honestly, credit to Baker Mayfield and the offense for being able to step up and finally find some rhythm in the second half. And for Baker's credit, he led a drive that Teddy Bridgewater and Sam Darnold failed to lead the last 2 years by leading what we thought was the game-winning drive. And according to Matt Rhule, the way that possession went, at least in when they got to the 16-yard line, was on that first down, Baker fumbles the ball. The thought was they're going to hand it off to McCaffrey, and when he looked at the film, it looked like McCaffrey was going to be in a situation where he would have been one-on-one with the safety after going through the hole, where he probably wins that matchup. Then on second down, they just want to move the ball a little bit, hand it off to Christian. Then third down is an RPO. The look was hopefully go to DJ, but the safety came up, so they handed it off. My first thought was that absolutely they're way too conservative, but after listening to what he had to say, there's at least more of an understanding to how they led to the situation where they kicked the field goal. But Matt Rhule also said that he was going to rely on his defense, a defense that was not great against the run. But you would think up to that point, Jacoby Brissett only had 120 yards passing at a secondary that has two former top 10 picks and J.C. Horn and C.J. Henderson, who both had some costly penalties in that game, and Dante Jackson, former second rounder, that they should be able to stop the Browns in that situation. But you're right, like 1:13 left, one timeout. We see it every week, a team able to get down the field. And all Cleveland needed was 35 yards.
Yeah.
I didn't know Cade York was going to be able to hit from 58 and probably get hit from 70 how much he banged that kick in.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly was a little confused. Fortunate into a game I really feel like they needed for the team to get off to a good start and get that momentum. A game they haven't really even come close to winning the last couple of years, especially the way that they played.
Julian Council is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. Yeah, the all three plays on Carolina's drive once they got it to the 16 after the horse collar tackle that happened on the Christian McCaffrey play. All three plays they ran apparently were RPOs. So my question, though, after the botched second down play netted them a 1 yard loss, why don't they just throw it? Like, I've always thought this, and you tell me if you think I'm wrong or not, because it's fair, because I think I'm almost on an island here. I am not in any way concerned about making the defense use their timeouts. Because you can stop the clock so many different ways when you're on offense. The best way to run the clock is to pick up a first down. And mm-hmm. at that point, the best way to pick up a first down on third down was not running the football. It was throwing the football. So why even bring that into the equation? If Baker Mayfield gets sacked for a loss of 10, you can still kick a field goal. I just didn't understand. Like, that ball should have been thrown on third down, not run.
No, I understand where you're coming from, and that's a good question to ask. Why they didn't just drop back and throw it? I think you have to ask, do they trust Baker Mayfield in that situation? Because it's been really early. I mean, he's only been in the offense about 30, 40 days, and Matt Rhule was talking about how they have to understand, we have to understand, that, hey, Baker's only been here for this short amount of time. Well, that's on you guys for not trading for him back in April during the draft, and it's also on you for splitting all these reps of Sam Darnold and having this sham quarterback competition that the offense looked as clunky and out of sync as it looked in the first half of the game. I just look at it as maybe they didn't trust Baker in that situation and also didn't trust their offensive line. Ricky Aquanu, he struggled on Sunday, giving up 2 sacks. They gave up 4 sacks as a whole. Maybe they didn't want to be in a situation where you got Clowney and you had Myles Garrett coming off the edge, and then Baker maybe holds on to the ball too long, tries to make something happen, throws an interception, and then you lose the game right then and there. So that's the only thought I could have, is maybe they just did not trust their quarterback in that situation. Now, if that's the case, they probably have bigger problems than just losing that game in Cleveland on Sunday.
I also think, and we're talking with Julian Council, Locked On Panthers podcast here on the Adam Gold Show, at Julian Council on Twitter. I also think that your perspective of the game really has everything to do with what your expectations are or were before the season started for this particular group. I think that the ceiling, best case scenario, is 8-9. So I'm going into this different than some fans who might be more optimistic. So I wasn't put off even by a loss to a backup quarterback, but there are people who have started the season at an 11 because, I don't know, because maybe they have outsized expectations for this group.
No, I just think those are the people who want Matt Rhule gone, and they're sick of David Tepper as well. You're not going to win those people back unless you win games. And Matt Rhule was on the radio locally in Charlotte, WFNZ, and he talked about how it's on him that the fan base feels the way they feel about him because he has not won games. So really, he's already lost those people, and those are the kind of people I try to ignore. And we get in this Twitter echo chamber where I'm not quite sure how people actually feel, because I talked to my friends who are – just, you know, normal people who aren't on social media all the time. And they're like, yeah, I mean, it's not that great, whatever. But then you go on social media and it's just people yelling mad as hell. Me personally, I was fairly optimistic going into the season that this team could win 10 games and be a playoff team. I felt like with this defense, with Baker Mayfield getting bringing better quarterback play and an improved offensive line, at least on paper, that this could be a better team. Now, as far as on Sunday, I didn't have high expectations for the offense, considering it had been 3 weeks since Baker Mayfield had been named a starter, and as a collective, they were all together. We didn't see DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson really in the preseason. We didn't see Christian McCaffrey, so I didn't know what to expect out of that unit. What I saw didn't necessarily surprise me. It was encouraging, though, to see them kind of figure things out there in the second half. Defensively, not shocked at all about how many yards they gave up to the Browns, considering when they played top 10 rushing teams a year ago, they went 1-4 and got gassed in those games. Just think about Dallas in Week 4, where they were the top running team in the league as far as rush defense, Carolina was, and they gave up 245 yards in that game when they went into the game averaging only 45 yards allowed on the ground. So that didn't surprise me at all. I'm not discouraged. I'm honestly encouraged just based off of how poorly they played. typically they don't come back in those situations. We only saw maybe a year, once last year in a Minnesota game where Sam Darnold put him behind the sticks at the beginning of the game with that interception on the first play. But other than that, the last 2 years, we have not seen Carolina play as poorly as they played, give up as many sacks as they have, give up as many yards on the ground, penalties, and still be in a situation to actually win the game. So considering that they were able to overcome all those things and be in a position with 113 by up by 1 point, that kind of encouragement shows me that encourages me and shows me that they're making some sort of progression. But of course, the progression that we did not see was in the win-loss column as they take yet another L.
All right, real quick before I let Julian Council go, and I appreciate your level-headed optimism and just level-headed look at this team. The at least one call on the final drive of the Browns. You could argue that two calls that clearly went against Carolina. The first one was a joke, an absolute joke, that's roughing the passer on Brian Burns. There's no penalty there at all. And I am not an advocate of replay, but heck, even in English soccer, they can get rid of stupid penalty calls or non-calls. And we can't do that in the NFL. If we're going to have replay, we might as well use it.
Right.
So that, I was not put off by the intentional grounding non-call, because ultimately, while there was a delay, he did spike the ball without standing up. What was your view on those two plays?
The first one, I didn't necessarily have too much of a problem with, the roughing the passer. In live action, it did look like Brian Burns might have had helmet-to-helmet contact. Now, with the benefit of replay, which we get at home and the referees aren't allowed to use in that situation, you do see that Burns pushes Jedrick Wills, the left tackle, into Jacoby Brissett, and that's where the contact was made. So I just found that to be unfortunate, and if there was no replay at all, we wouldn't be yelling about this 2 days later. Now, the second one, I take a little bit more issue with that because it did look weird, and it probably, by the letter of the law, should have been an intentional grounding penalty on Cleveland. Kevin Stefanski, the Browns head coach, he was asked about it yesterday, and he was kind of laughing, saying, like, yeah, we basically got away with one. But I look at it, too, like, okay, cool. Bad two penalties that didn't go in Carolina's way. Even before then, after the roughing the passer, the Carolina Panthers defense still needs to get that stop and not even give the Browns an opportunity to get into field goal range. So they have to be better. They need to step up. And the Panthers didn't lose that game because of those two penalties. They lost the game because of other penalties like C.J. Henderson basically tackling Amari Cooper in the end zone. They lose because they have five defensive penalties that lead to a first down. They lose because they can't get off the field and stop the run. They lose because the offense was a complete no-show. So a slow start from the offense plus poor defense as far as stopping the run, that led to the loss. Yep. And then you can throw in the two penalties that certainly aided the Browns in that final drive. But those are the two things I'm looking at more so than the penalties that led to the Panthers' loss on Sunday. But despite all that, they were right there in the game. But, yeah, tough luck for the rough and the passer. The second one, yeah, seems pretty clear that probably is supposed to be intentional grounding. But, you know, they didn't get the call, and it is what it is.
How many times are we going to say it is what it is? And now the Panthers, right, every week. Now the Panthers are going up to play the Giants, and Saquon Barkley is coming off. I believe he went for 1,000 yards in week one.
Yeah, they ran for 238 yards. So if you were concerned about the run defense last week, it's not going to probably get any better this weekend. Like they just got to toughen up, man. I don't know what else to say other than that, because it's just embarrassing to have that constant performance on the ground. It's been like 4 years in a row now where they have not been able to stop the run. Don't know what they got to do at this point in time.
And maybe give Ike Ekwonu some help, a tight end, a running back on his side, just to slow down somebody who's trying to kill the quarterback. I would just think maybe do that once.
They did that once, and one of the sacks he gave up, Tommy Trimble, gave a pretty lackadaisical effort in the chip, and Icky got beat immediately.
That is true. Yeah, I thought Myles Garrett was unkind to Ike Ekwonu. Julian Council, at Julian Council, Locked On Panthers podcast. Thanks, man. I appreciate your time.
Absolutely, Adam. Take care.
You got it. See, Julian and I, we saw both those penalties differently.
Yeah,
he's optimistic.
Somehow, why? I don't know.
How are they winning 10?
I know. I don't see it.
How?
And I'm a Panther fan. Right, I try to be optimistic, but I'm a realist, too.
I don't know how they're going to win 6. How are they going to win 10? But
hot take.
Look,
yeah.
It is. I've been wrong before.
Same.
So there is that to kind of just feel good about. I have been wrong before. Panthers at Giants next week. That should look. I didn't think the Giants are going to be all that good. I'm still not sure the Giants are all that good.
Yeah.
Remember that, and again, it is 1 week into the season. If we're drawing real conclusions after one game, we should all have our heads examined. But if you believed something beforehand and it looked like it was going to be so in week one, then you are more than willing to ride with it until proven otherwise. And I will just say that the Tennessee Titans are a team that I think will miss the playoffs. I have very little faith in the Tennessee Titans. They had two pretty good receiving options last year in A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, and they have neither of them now. Why they allowed A.J. They traded A.J. Brown to the Philadelphia Eagles. He only had 10 catches for 155 yards in the opener for the Eagles. And the Eagles are going to be really good. I'm surprised they gave up 35 points to the Lions. But so anyway, the Giants, who ran all over Tennessee, maybe the Panthers will have some success running the football. The thing about the Panthers and running the ball was that in game one, they seemed to be best when the play was busted. Like when the snap rolled back to McCaffrey?
Yeah.
That was their best play.
They actually made something happen there.
That was their best play. I said this before the game. I don't think it's crazy. 30 might be a stretch, but Christian McCaffrey needs to touch the ball minimum 25 times a game. Minimum.
Yes.
It's no offense to Deontay Foreman or Chuba Hubbard. No offense. This is not that those guys are incapable. If you're going to hand the ball to them, you have wasted everybody's time.
Absolutely.
McCaffrey, if you're going to run it, hand it to 22.
You can't keep him in a bubble forever. That's the thing. He's made a name for himself for a reason.
We talked about this. This goes all the way back to the Cam Newton days. And if you're going to approach a player like Christian McCaffrey and say, well, you know, we want to protect him for the future, I'm like, no, you can't do that. Because if you do that, you're wasting the present.
Well, there is no future if you don't use him. So what do you get?
Visual,
are we going to make the playoffs without him?
I threw my hands up in the air, which is terrible for radio, but good if you're watching us on TV. It just doesn't make any sense. If you are saving Christian McCaffrey, you are saving him for a day that's not going to come. So with all respect, you've already paid him. You might as well use him. Because the truth is, and I've been saying this about the NFL for a long time, and I think I'm right. There's no five-year plan. Gosh, 3 years is sort of an outside plan, too. After year one, if you're not showing signs that you're better, then you probably have the wrong, not just coach, you probably have the wrong people in charge. And I don't really believe that Scott Fitterer is bad at his job. I'm not saying that Scott Fitterer's got to go. I'm not that guy. I mean, we don't see him general manage every day, but we see Matt Rhule coach every Sunday. That hasn't really gotten better. David Tepper is probably the bigger problem with this franchise. But again, you know, all the owner can do is provide the resources. I think he's trying. Yeah. He just doesn't necessarily know the best way to go about it, but I think he's trying. But
did you see him shaking his head? That clip. There was a clip on Twitter where he was just shaking
his
head.
That was early in the game where they were completely inept.
We're all there.
Their first three series where they gained negative yards.
Yes.
Like they were actually, I think after their third series, they got it back to zero.
Right.
Right? I think they got it back to zero on their third series.
Ugh.
It just was not good.
Embarrassing.
Yeah. Embarrassing is relative. Again, I have very low expectations for this team. I thought going in, Baker was better than Sam, but he's not. Now, Baker has a way of winning you over with his confidence and talking to other people. We talked to Darren Gant a week before the season started, and there's a lot of good about Baker Mayfield. And I'm not saying that Baker can't be pretty good. I think he can be, a pretty good quarterback.
Yeah.
But they didn't give him any time. It wasn't just the four sacks. I mean, he had no time in the backfield, and then he couldn't catch a direct snap.
Nope. I mean, same issue with Cam.
How many issues?
Never had time.
Right. How many times did they drop the snap? Was it three times?
At least.
It could have been more. I mean, there were a lot of those issues. Real quick about Denver last night, and this I'll probably get into more later on. There were so many instances where it looked like Denver was rushing to snap the ball before the play clock ran off. Apologize. They just looked completely disorganized. Completely disorganized. That's on the head coach. All of that is on the head coach. You have to be, you have to look more prepared.
This is the Adam Gold Show.